For centuries, Pacific Islanders have been sharing stories that connect us across the region. Stories from the Pacific is a weekly program that continues that tradition, bringing you deep and personal stories from a diverse range of people. Athletes, farmers, artists, teachers, activists, entrepreneurs, all united by their Pacific heritage and incredible journeys.
Listen to Stories from the Pacific on your favorite podcast app.
This is an ABC podcast.
You're listening to Sisters Let's Talk on ABC Radio Australia.
Around the world, we see men leading their countries or standing up in Parliament or Congress. So you'd be forgiven for thinking politics is a man's domain. In fact, the number of women politicians in the Pacific is fewer than 8%. That's according to IPU Parlin, which measures the global averages of women in politics. But there are more and more women putting their hands up to represent their constituents. In Bougainville, a record number of women contested the 2025 election. The president of the Marshall Islands is a woman, and until recently, so was the Prime Minister of Samoa. We spoke to the former Samoan Prime Minister, Fiame Naomi Mataafa, a few years ago when she was still in the top job. Here's what she had to say about the woman who most influenced her, her mother.
You learn by what you see in your environment. So, you know, I'm looking at my mother, I'm seeing all the other women, all the other girls in my family, and you pick your way through that. My mother was always active with women's organizations. So starting right from village, church, you know, national organizations like the National Council of Women, you know, she was always very active, very vocal. So I saw that from a very young age.
A few years ago, we also spoke to Fijian politician Lenora Kerekere Tabua, who at the time was one of 11 women in the 51-member parliament. Here's what she said about going into politics.
There was a decision by government which I felt was very unfair to our people, following on from Tropical Cyclone Winston. I went to social media and to, you know, letters to the editors in the Fiji Times, asking people to get on board with my plea to government to cancel an event that they had planned. Going back to when I was 11 years old, I remember very vividly, I was in boarding school for a few months, and I had been picked by some miracle to be on the school athletics team. They treated us, the athletes, as being very special in the school. And I remember one morning sitting up in my seat at the dining hall and looking around at my non-athlete friends and realizing they're eating a different breakfast from me. How come they're not getting the fruit I'm getting? How come, you know, we've got more butter and jam than they have? And I remember that was probably one of the first times I really felt a deep sense of injustice and what were you going to do about it.
Wow, that was a very young age.
Yeah, it was. But, you know, after that, I really didn't participate in any politics at all. But I've never had any trouble being outspoken. I think is probably why I had no hesitation in, you know, standing in the last general elections. I'm fortunate that I, in all the jobs that I've held, I've held positions where I can stand up for people. And I feel that that has been perhaps a small part of the foundation in leading me into politics.
So what does it take to get more women into politics? What are the barriers and what can we learn from the women who are already members of parliament? I'm Natasha Metten. Sisters, let's talk about getting more women into politics. Ruth Cross Kwansing is a relatively new member of the Kiribati Parliament, but that doesn't mean she's sitting on the sidelines. As the member for Women, Youth, Sports and Social Affairs, she has a full plate. Ruth was elected in 2024 as an independent before joining the ruling Top One Kiribati Party. So what inspired her to go into politics?
I spent a lot of time talking myself out of politics. You know, it was, you know, there was a voice in my head and I kept telling it to be quiet because I thought that would be ruining a very good life that I had built for my family. I was on the bounce back after a difficult relationship. I was looking after my mother and at the time providing for very young children on my own. I was doing a fair bit of humanitarian and development work. I had been awarded an Order of Merit in recognition of my efforts back then when I was focused on humanitarian projects as the president of our local Rotary Club. Things that I had been doing to just be useful and entertained while I was pregnant. And I would say to myself and anyone else who suggested it that it's not only members of parliament that can do meaningful work to solve problems and serve the public. And the aid and development projects that I was working on were in the hundreds and thousands and millions, from grassroots projects, entrepreneurship programs, vaccination programs, and even developing strategic plans for a ministry. And I thought I was doing plenty of useful things. But yeah, one night while I was, you know, pondering over and rejecting this idea as per usual, it was my mum that said she wanted to talk to me. She said she had been thinking and that she believed that I should run for parliament. You could have knocked me over with a feather. I was pretty shocked and I asked her why she said that to me. I had tears in my eyes and, I'm getting emotional again. And when I told her that I was just standing there at that time wondering why I kept getting this feeling and how she did that, how she asked me at that very moment. And she looked me square in the eyes and said, "Ruth, don't you know by now that God talks to me?" And I stopped rejecting the idea after that. I sort of accepted at that moment that it wasn't a silly idea and that it was, you know, perhaps more of a gentle whisper from God about his plans for me and perhaps work that I had to do for my beautiful islands of Kiribati.
What issues drive you in your role as a politician?
There's a huge amount of issues, the same issues that I was, you know, tackling when I was doing the humanitarian and development work in a country like Kiribati. There's so many problems at the grassroots level. You know, when you look at what governments do at an overarching strategic level, I was there at the grassroots level, you know, building toilets, developing programs in entrepreneurship and micro lending and business training for women. So it was always about poverty alleviation and trying to give people dignity, you know. And when I say dignity, it's things like, you know, basic access to sanitation and, of course, clean water. But then you get to a point where you realize that in order to have a greater impact and do things at scale, you have to take on bigger roles. I sort of got as far as I could go at the level that I was doing. And, you know, when you're talking about a country like Kiribati, where we have 150,000 people spread across 21 inhabited islands that are spread across 3.5 million kilometers of ocean, the logistics involved to bring about meaningful change to reach all those people is huge. Yeah, and you need a lot of support to be able to achieve it. So I guess I just wanted to have more impact on the work that I thought that I could do and that I was doing at a grassroots level.
What do you think you bring to the role that's different to your male counterparts?
This is a really tricky question for me, because when I try and think about anything that's different about what I bring to this role as a woman, anything that I would say about myself is not a mutually exclusive quality to women, right? So my technical expertise and empathy, determination and faith, these aren't female qualities, because all my colleague ministers and MPs have these attributes. Yes. As well, and we've all sort of answered this calling, right? So it's not that I think that I have specifically different attributes to others, but I know that I have a unique blend of strengths and attributes. But when it comes to this, what I will say is that I just don't believe that it's fair to leave the burden and responsibility of leadership solely to men. You know, it's such hard work. And I feel like they've shouldered this risk. Oh, why am I getting emotional again? It's really hard work, and I feel like men have shouldered this responsibility for a very long time. They've leaned on women to manage and cope, of course, but In my mind, Pacific society is looking primarily to men for formal leadership responsibility. It's like you're on a voyage trying to paddle a canoe with only one arm. You know, it's not fair. You know, they need help, and it's a heavy burden to carry. And we have to remember that leaders are just ordinary people. You know, they're leaders. They have the ordinary people with extraordinary responsibilities. And when we only look to men for this, it's not fair to leave the burden only on them, especially when women have so much to offer and we can also shoulder the load and carry this responsibility. It's just hard to get women to do it, right? But if we think about the construct of our families and communities, people have always needed a woman's help to exist and thrive. It's the same in families, communities, villages, societies, and government leadership. All our majority of our directors and managers and workers in public service are women. But at a parliament level, at that really upper leadership level, they're needed there too, but they're just not running, right? And as that is, say, for the Pacific or even Kiribati. But I remember something that Prime Minister Fiamme said at we had a women's leaders retreat in Fiji. And she said, this was a PIF leaders retreat, and she said, and I love what she said, and she basically said, if we're not using 50% of our resources, we are impoverished by it. The Tuvaluan Prime Minister at the same retreat, because they didn't have a female minister to send, so the Prime Minister of Tuvalu, Feleti Teo, he's the Minister for Women. At that conversation, he basically said, women have other priorities. It's not that they, in the Pacific, it's not that their leadership abilities are not recognized, because they are. It's just quite difficult to get them to run.
And Ruth, why do you think it's so hard to get women into politics?
Well, there's a study by ILO, the International Labour Organization, and one of the outcomes, one of the statistics or the data that they came out with was showing just how much unpaid care work women are doing in our societies, and it was something like 80%. So women are just extremely busy already. You know, they're working, they're, you know, looking after their families and extended families. Like, I believe me, as a female MP and minister, I'm already trying to recruit women and talk to women every time I see, another female that I go, oh my goodness, she would make such an amazing MP or minister. So I start to say to them, you know, you should run in the next election, and you would not believe the amount of very good excuses, we call them excuses, or just reasons that they have as to why they say they're not ready or not willing. And again, I'll go back to just how difficult and how hard it is to be an MP and how much sacrifice it takes, right? And I'm talking about sacrifice from your family and the priorities that women tend to put first. It's not that they can't do it. It's just that they're too busy. And, you know, we talk about leaders just being ordinary people. You know, I've got young children, and I get up and I yell at my children in the morning to finish their breakfast and get ready for school, and then I go off and feed the pigs. And obviously, I've got a lot of things to think about in my family and home life. And then you then think about what it would take to become an MP and realize that your family is no longer going to be the family that you focus on of your immediate and extended family. You then have to consider that an entire constituency is going to become your family. And how do you manage that? And this is how I, in my mind, women look at it. And it's a really big thing to shoulder. So whilst we're, you know, typically happy to support others in this role and work hard for our families, taking the mantle of a responsibility that's going to take you away from your family and give you and increase the load of what you already have by 1,000, 10,000, 50,000, 100,000, like, what is your responsibility? And I think it is not a light decision for a woman to make. And as someone in here, you know, as someone that holds this role, it's something that I grapple with as well, because I have to go, okay, I'm doing this, and I'm applying all my energy to do the very best I can to serve in my role, which as a Minister for Women, Youth, Sports, Social Affairs, so the Welfare and Poverty Alleviation Program is in my ministry, children, child welfare, those with disabilities, churches and communities, it's a lot. And obviously I have to dedicate all my time, effort and energy to that. And then I sit back and I think, in order to do that, other people are raising my children. And so it's a kind of thing that for a woman to sit back and go, am I going to give myself here or there, and which one is more important? And to me, this is what stops women from coming forward. So we look at who the other female minister is, Tangariki. She's had a long career in politics, but her children are grown up. And then we have another female MP, Ruta Nemta Babel, who's the MP from Mayana Island, and she's got a young family like myself. And her and I talk about this all the time. We know that we've sacrificed what we think we could or could be doing better for something that we felt called or compelled to do to serve our country and our people, right? And so, and I'm not saying it like it's a negative thing. It's just a barrier. So the effort that we put in, it has to match the sacrifice, right? So because you never want to sit back after a day's work and go, I wasted today, because you can't waste your time in leadership because it's come at such a great cost for your family. So on that sense, I know that we work extremely hard because of what we have to make it worth it.
How many children do you have?
I've got three. I have two sons. I adopted my youngest. She's two. And my husband has seven. So together we have 10 kids.
And are your children proud of you?
Oh, look, they are. My older son is in Australia, you know, and again, he doesn't hear from me. He's 21. He doesn't hear from me as much as he could have or would, but he does understand what I'm doing and is proud of me. My five-year-old is incredibly proud of me. He's already talking about how he's going to have a career in politics himself one day.
That's nice.
Yeah. So supposedly we've got another budding MP there. But look, they are, and I know that they know I work hard and why I do it. And every time I travel, which is a lot, they have the gifts that they're waiting for when I come back. They have their list ready. So they don't dislike the travel either. They don't like it when I leave, but they love it when I come back because there's always a bounty of presents for them if they've been good.
You recently attended the Pacific Islands Forum Women Leaders Meeting. Why is it important for women leaders to gather at a conference like this?
I'm a new MP and a new minister as of last year. So this was my first women leaders meeting. It was fantastic, not just in terms of helping to inspire and strengthen our leadership by, you know, looking around the table and fostering friendships and relationships, but also the things that we were able to discuss, which of course focus on, you know, gender equality, social inclusion, our regional frameworks and policy and the development issues that we face in our country, which are not unique, of course, to our country. We have many shared challenges, and the opportunity to come together and talk about these regional frameworks is fantastic. And then obviously strengthening the standards that we have set for ourselves and the goals that we set for ourselves. But I think definitely, you know, my favorite part of this previous meeting, look, apart from the things, you know, being able to listen to, you know, Prime Minister Fiamme and listen to someone share her, you know, her leadership journey and her experiences, and there was so much wisdom, you know, we got emotional listening to her because it was so inspiring and really gives us a sort of a renewed sense of determination to tackle the issues that we're responsible for as ministers. But I think being able to come together and talk about why investment in women is so important, and to understand just how much, you know, women deliver in terms of contributing towards these development programs, and then to have the opportunity to discuss these and call for the support that is needed in terms of developing these regional frameworks, which obviously then trickles into the funding and the programs and the strategies that we're all sort of using together in order to achieve the targets that we have.
Ruth, finally, what's your message to other women who may be thinking about politics or even thinking they can't do it like you used to?
It can be done. Yes, it's hard. And yes, it is a huge sacrifice. But I think it's an important one. And one of the things that I've been comparing it to is it's like a, if you think of leadership, I think of it as like a bird trying to soar, and that you've got two wings, and that you've got one wing that's the men and the other wing that's the woman. In order for them to really soar high on this journey, you need both. And even though it's going to come at a huge sacrifice, if you feel the call, if you feel something inside that tells you that you need to do this thing, then you need to just put your hand up and you need to do the work and make the effort, because if it's meant to be, it will happen. And then all the support that's needed in order to make that journey successful, it falls into place. So my message to women is to just do it, like to just get in there, because it really is a better conversation when we have more balance in the voices available in developing solutions.
That's Ruth Cross Kwansing, the eKiribati Minister for Women, Youth, Sport and Social Affairs.
You're listening to Sisters Let's Talk on ABC Radio Australia.
How can more women like Ruth be encouraged to enter politics? As I mentioned, Bougainville saw a record number of 34 women contesting the recent election. Some of them had the support of a group called Leitana Nehan Women's Development Agency, which runs trainings for women who are thinking of running for politics. Helen Hakena is the agency's executive director.
Last year, we started all the capacity building training for women across the regions in Bougainville. Like, our goal was to empower and to equip them with information and skills to be confident in running for office. Like, right now, we've got our general elections, and we are so happy and glad that there are 37 women contesting. We are so happy that this is showing us that we had a good positive outcome of those trainings that we have conducted last year and early this year.
What sort of things did you teach them?
The roles and responsibilities of a parliamentarian, what is politics, and also building their capacity, you know, to public speaking, to stand in front, how to do their platforms. These are the things that we taught them, and about women's issues as well. Like, we went through a whole lot of training. Women were discussing issues affecting women, like health security, the environmental damages, the things that affect women that would give these candidates experiences. You know, we gave the women all this information so that those who chose to become candidates would do up their platform to suit the needs of the women on the ground here in Bougainville.
And how did the training improve the women's confidence?
It really did improve the women's confidence. Like, they set up groups within their own constituencies. They have their own fundraising. It really raised their confidence in doing their fundraisings, because usually we know that political parties do not usually support women. So we encourage those women who were thinking of becoming candidates in this general election to do their fundraisings beginning last year, because political parties, like from previous experiences, do not support women that much here in Papua New Guinea.
Mm. And Helen, speaking about confidence, why do you think they don't have the same level of confidence to run compared to the men?
Like, women have confidence, but the men usually say that politics is not women's business. So we taught women, said, politics, we do politics every day. We women are so, like, we know what is wrong. We know what the needs are in the families. You can become a politician if you want to. Because women, you know, we deal with problems every day, and that is politics. So just giving them the information that they are equivalent to men, they can run for office anytime they want.
Exactly. And how did the women in your training respond to the experience, Helen?
They responded really well. They were very happy that they were able to be encouraged in these trainings to continue to have support. Like, women supported each other. So they are really confident that women in the constituencies are very supportive of women candidates now. And women during the campaigns, we also provide avenues for women candidates to come and campaign. Like last Sunday, we invited women who are contesting the North Vaughanville open seat to come and speak after the church. Our church service here in Boca Town Parish, so women can have the opportunity to listen to all of them. So it was unfortunate that only three women turned up. The others had family problems, so they didn't show up. But it's so overwhelming to see women supportive of women candidates, because we know women have the same qualification, but more so they are much more qualified than men as well in politics.
Why do you say that?
I say that because in the lineup of all, you know, we've got former combatant seat, we've got men seat, open seats for constituencies, men, like women, the women that are contesting now, they've completed high school, they've gone to colleges, they've gone to universities, whereas some of the men who are contesting across Bougainville, they are not qualified. They are just, they are standing just, we know it's just for money, you know.
Helen, what kinds of issues do women bring to election campaigns in the autonomous region of Bougainville?
Like women who are campaigning now, they are talking about education for women, economic security for women, health issues for women, because here right now, our hospital is run down, there is nothing, and there are women dying in childbirth and other preventable diseases. Like, so women are talking about real issues that are affecting the families and communities, like education, health, economic security, environment security, all these things. Women are raising issues that are really human security needs for the women and the communities at large here in Bougainville. They are not talking about roads. Roads are important and other things, but they are talking about real issues affecting women and our communities.
And how are their issues different to what men are campaigning on?
The issues are really, like, it's really personal, really personal. It comes right down to the family level, the issues that women are raising. Whereas the men are talking about big infrastructure, the roads, the wharves, the bridges, building houses and all these things. And they're talking about money here, money there. But the women are just talking about the things that they feel real personal needs of a person, not a building, not a road and all these things. Real issues that affect women's livelihood and children and the entire community. So what the women, how the women are affected and how they talk about their issues, those issues really, you know, it helps the entire community, including men as well. Women are very, very inclusive.
Why do you want to see more women in politics, Helen?
It's just to create a balance in discussions at the floor of the parliament. And, you know, in Papua New Guinea, we do not have, some women, only I think two women in the parliament of Papua New Guinea. In Bougainville, we really would like to see women in our parliament here in Bougainville, because we are moving towards our independent nationhood and women are very, very vocal. They will not retrace their steps. We really would like to have women's voices so that they can push forward the cries for independence for the people of Bougainville. And women are, like I said earlier, women, we want more women there so that the women can gain from the, you know, the discussions that are carried out at the floor of the parliament, because those women will be discussing real human needs of the women of Bougainville and the communities of Bougainville. Mm-hmm. Women think about all the human needs, not the men.
That's Helen Hakena from Leitana Nehan Women's Development Agency. Thanks to my guests today, Ruth Cross Kwansing and Helen Hakena. I found them both inspirational in different ways. Sisters Let's Talk is presented by me, Natasha Metin. Our supervising producer is Kim Lester. Our executive producer is Faleanga Fulu Inga Stunsna. Sisters Let's Talk is an ABC Radio Australia production. We acknowledge the Yagara, Turrbal and Darumbal peoples on whose land this program is produced. Emtasol na lukimu next time.